This is CliffCentral.com.
Better shake it up.
All right.
She gonna make it up.
G-Eazy.
I don't like too many people that ain't gotta like me.
Featuring 40. Shake it up. Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. It's the brand new month of February. We're already on the 4th of Feb, and Sia had his birthday yesterday. Now he feels like he's really entering adulthood.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that was very, very... That sounded so convincing. I'm bowled over.
It sounds quite apt because I'm very confused by this age.
Oh, well.
24, I still feel like you are just in the middle. I think 25, you can officially call yourself a young adult.
But you're not there yet.
Yeah. And then I still have some friends who are in university, so I kind of think, okay, am I in that group? But no, okay. I'm just lost.
Don't worry about it. Just take every day as it comes.
Okay, thanks. Okay. That's at least is like some positive words from you guys. Because this entire weekend and past couple of days, you folks have been horrible with advice about age.
We're just telling you how horrible it's going to get, right, Ben?
The reality of it.
Very good, yeah.
Let me see if I can find what you sent me. Yes, Leanne, you said, a fun part of your 30s is waking up thinking you're hungover and then remembering, nope, that's just how my body feels now.
I said that's what you've got to look forward to in 7 years' time. So you've still got plenty of time.
You've still got lots of time, so yeah, relax. All right, so it is a brand new week and everybody is out there getting stuff done. It's the shortest month of the year, and to my brothers and sisters, Black History Month. yes?
Yep.
It's always the shortest month for, you know, isn't that typical? The white man.
Please do go on, Gareth. Yes.
I'm telling you. But let's look at some of the stuff that's in the news today. First of all, did anyone see that incredible video of the giraffe with a lion on its back?
Oh, my goodness me.
Did you see it, Ben?
No. But, I mean, this happens often in the wild.
Have we missed out on something?
Listen to this story.
So... it's actually, we've had him in studio before. It's the guy who started latestsightings.com.
Nadav, I remember him.
Young kid.
Yeah, brilliant kid.
And it's really amazing footage of this giraffe who, a whole, what are they called?
Pride.
It's Pride of Lions. It's, as usual, it's the lionesses. Tracked down and... There are about six of them at his feet, and two of them are holding onto his back legs, and another one climbs onto his back.
Yeah, hectic.
And starts gnawing at the back of his neck. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would obviously like to go for the jugular, but with a giraffe, you literally...
It's hard work.
Yeah, you can't really get to it.
And its neck is about as thick as your entire body if you're a lion.
But what I can't believe, I mean, we know how big lions are. We've seen them in real life. You look at him on this giraffe, and he looks like a kitten. Mm. The size comparison.
That's a she.
That's what I mean.
Well, that thing, that one.
That's what I mean.
That's quite majestic.
Anyway, so these lions were at this giraffe.
Yeah.
Or lionesses were at this giraffe for 5 hours.
Uh-huh.
And finally, they got tired, and the giraffe just escaped.
Amazing.
The giraffe may die of its injuries. You never know. But, I mean, what an escape.
Well, it's going to need some therapy. I mean, that's just that's trauma.
And for a lot of the time, he just stands still and lets them do their thing. Well, he can't really move because he's got tons of weight on his back
legs.
He's
probably conserving his energy. He probably just thought, okay, that hurts a bit. But I reckon I can do it for a little bit longer because if I try run now, then I'm going to be stuffed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be able to, like, you know, shield the pain.
When he finally got... The lioness is off his back feet. He stomped around. And I mean, he could probably kill a lion by doing that.
Oh, you could get a serious kick from a giraffe.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Serious kick. Could do some massive damage.
But it is. This cat is just holding on, just like on the back. Just climbing on.
I usually don't like watching these because they're just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that lions need to eat.
Way of the world, sure.
But this was amazing, and he doesn't seem to be... You know, there's no blood and guts and gore and all of that.
Mm. Cats are just so like cats. Hey? This is like Hopkins on the couch over the weekend. The mannerisms, it's all the same.
Yeah,
it's the same.
It really is the same.
All right. Well, if you're that giraffe or you're listening to us this morning, you know that giraffe, then please pass on our congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You never
go and
know.
Pick on giraffes someone your own size, lions.
You never know who's listening.
Giraffes are known to love a good podcast.
Now, of course, Ben, Super Bowl Sunday was yesterday in America.
So good luck having anything online today that doesn't have Super Bowl news, because all the ads, of course.
Correct. So people are going to be talking about the ads, but they'll be talking about the Patriots, and they'll be talking about the various players, and there'll probably be some small comments about Maroon 5. See, I took the trouble to watch them.
Bland and cold Maroon 5.
You didn't miss anything, Sia, right?
Yeah, well, it starts off really the middle of the field. Maroon 5 are performing on a giant big M for Maroon 5, go figure. Mm-hmm. They perform some of their big hits, Sunday Morning, Sugar, and then they bring in Travis Scott, who comes in the middle of a fire formation. Very weirdly, and I think we'll still see a lot of memes around this, there was probably about 10 seconds of a SpongeBob montage.
Really?
What?
Wow.
SpongeBob SquarePants. It's a scene from the series where Squidward says, and now introducing the most amazing musician, SpongeBob. And like, we're so all confused by that. And he carries on, Maroon 5 carries on performing. Big Boy from Outkast drives out in a car. They continue performing together. And it ends off with Adam Levine taking his shirt off. And then now, also, that has some people riled up already, saying, Janet Jackson showed off her nipple and she got suspended. Adam Levine can show off his nipples and that's all fine. But you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Outrageous. Yeah, so it really is 13 minutes of your life you won't really get back. In my opinion, I think they could have squeezed Cardi B's integrity aside by offering her more money, because I think Cardi would have been a nice, relevant person.
Yeah.
And also she features on a Maroon 5 song. Or they should have gone the other side of the scale by going like and getting a 90s throwback artist who really has nothing to lose in this time, mm-hmm. and would have appreciated the spotlight, slap in a kids choir in there to get a We Are The World moment, then you would have been safe in this day and age of everything
that's
going on. Look
at you, Sia, directing the halftime.
He should be directing it. Sia should be. He'd do a better job than they did, because clearly nobody cares.
Yeah, very, very underwhelming.
Well, you know who does care is the economy. I know they probably got lots of money during the Super Bowl, but the day after, they are estimated to lose in productivity $484
million. Million?
Yeah, but you're going to recoup that in years over the next couple of weeks. People flashing back to the time they had.
Oh, what does this mean? Like, people are watching the Super Bowl, they stay up late, they don't go to work?
Yeah, the study finds that 5% of professionals plan to take Monday off altogether.
Okay.
Another 3 say they expect to show up an hour or so late or take a half day. As you can guess, alcohol is a factor. 12% of the people surveyed saying they expect to be hungover or extra tired after the game.
extra tired.
The younger the respondent, the higher the likelihood.
All right.
And those who do show up aren't exactly going to be focused on work either. More than 3/4 of the professionals that the study spoke to say they will discuss the Super Bowl the next day at work.
Yeah.
Barring a dramatic finish, the commercials will be the most popular topic of conversation, with 40% saying that's what they plan to talk about.
Okay.
And just 21% intending to talk about the game.
Well, on the whole productivity, a lot of that's got to do with the fact that 325.5 million gallons of beer was consumed over the Super Bowl. Domino's Pizza say they've sold at least 2 million by themselves pizzas. 2 million pizzas just through the Domino's chain. 1.3 billion chicken wings. That's what gets thrown in there.
That's amazing.
$58.5 million worth of avocados will be just made into dips, obviously.
Got to get that guac.
Guacamole.
And those fat fingers with chips then go into dips. 10 million pounds of ribs. That's obviously not the British form of currency. That's the weight metric there. $227 million of chips.
That's a lot of chips.
Put into the dips.
Expensive potatoes.
Going back to the weight metric, 3.8 million pounds of popcorn. Will be shoveled
and popcorn. You know how much popcorn you've got to put in there to make it weigh that?
That's like the size of like Venus in popcorn.
God, that's a lot.
88 million pounds of cheese. So no one's having a poo for 3 days either in America.
In America, you only get one type of cheese, and it's the processed kind.
It's that radioactive yellow. Yeah.
Radioactive kind.
So, yeah.
That's a lot of food and drink.
There's a lot of backed up colons now for this week, so...
That's a great thought to have. Let's think about that this morning.
All another right. reason why people will be late for work, sitting on the loo.
Well, just in case anyone does, end up having a problem during one of these games, and particularly the Super Bowl, because that's what Americans watch. But in South Africa, if you were watching the Marvel superheroes on the field this weekend, then maybe you would have choked on something. Now, if you don't have anyone around, you think you might die.
Are you all right?
Choking.
Are you on your own and you're going to die and there's no way out, or is there a way? Is there something you can do if you're choking and you're on your own?
There's a firefighter who's written an article.
Yeah.
A Colorado firefighter and paramedic, Jeff Riemann. He's been in the business for 22 years. He's a life support instructor, a CPR instructor. And, I mean, there are times when you're by yourself. It's happened to me where I've choked on a long string of onion or something. You think, it's horrible. And obviously, when you've got someone else with you, they can perform the Heimlich maneuver.
Heimlich maneuver. If someone's going for a Heimlich
maneuver.
A hind lick is a bit more 50 Shades of Grey.
You shouldn't let someone do that to you.
On the first date.
Yeah, good point.
And he's shared a video of how to save yourself. So you instead of... don't run around like a goat making noises. Instead of the pressure coming from someone from behind you, you're going to get onto all fours.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then
now listen carefully, because this could save your life. Get on all fours, yeah?
You get on all fours. Then prepare to extend both arms forward at the same time. So the idea is...
Like a downward dog?
No, so... The basic position is on all fours.
All right,
now sit back and put your arms above your head. Lift both arms upward somewhat above the head so that you then throw yourself at the floor, okay?
Like you're bowing down to someone.
No, like...
I'm confused.
Like you've just had a bomb go off behind you. You throw yourself onto the floor so that the floor hits your chest. Hits the diaphragm.
Oh,
make sure your head is back as well.
No, this sounds like you could seriously injure yourself.
No, look, it's you if you're going to die.
Yes, you're on your knees.
Yes, you're going to smash your face as well here.
You're on your knees. You go on your knuckles.
You don't necessarily have to.
And you basically just flop on the ground.
Yeah, throw yourself.
Just put pressure on your stomach and your chest.
And that can really help. You don't have to go and clenched fists. He explains in the video he's done that out of habit because he's a boxer.
How are you?
Better after that.
Much better.
No, so you might survive, but you'll have a smashed face and like a fractured rib from throwing yourself.
You could very well.
Yeah,
so only do it if you're really dying, okay?
All right, very good.
By that time, the panic of it all would have killed me, so I think there's no need.
Just place a small pillow where you think your face will smash.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Sure, I'm going to have that time.
I'm just going to look for a small pillow while I choke.
Just always have a small pillow with you.
Pillow.
Oh, that's your answer. Just always have a pillow with you all the time.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Ben.
All right. Well, what else is going on before we get to our guests?
Have you heard about these polar vortex things that were happening in America?
Yo.
All right. So I actually messaged two friends of mine who live in Alberta in Canada.
Oi.
And they are. I looked at the temperature thing on my phone. I went to Calgary, which is near where they are, and it said the temperature there was minus 20-something, but you know it's got an index that feels like. It says, what does it feel like temperature? And the feel like temperature was minus 33.
It's like Scotland.
That's Celsius, huh?
Celsius. So I said to them, look, how are you surviving? And they actually sent some interesting stuff. And I'll play it for you in a second, but here's the screenshot just so that Leanne and Ben and Sia can vouch for me. Feels like minus 33 in Calgary in Canada. So that's a miserable temperature. And then this friend of mine kind of explained what that feels like and what the factors are. So listen to this quickly. This might be able to help. Here we go.
Hi.
So
So, Gareth, to answer your question with regards to how do you cope at minus 33 and all that, firstly, the real feel is mostly based around frostbite, not hypothermia. So frostbite is the feel on your skin and how quickly the outer layer goes dead, as opposed to hypothermia with the core cooling down. And it's affected by things like wind almost exclusively that and temperature. But when it comes to the feeling of cold, there's basically four factors, in my opinion, that plays a role. The first is the actual temperature. Secondly is sunshine or shade. Then it's the wind. And lastly, humidity. And a combination of all four of those really affects the way that you feel. So I've been...
How's that, huh? Isn't that interesting? What do you think of that?
I don't think a body can feel the difference between minus 25 and minus 33. Surely it's the same.
It's just miserable. It's just horrible. It's cold and shit.
It's just trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
21 people have died because of this whole polar vortex thing.
Uh-huh.
Lake Michigan, which is essentially, if you're in Chicago, you look ahead and go, oh, wow, that's an ocean. That's how big it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lake Michigan froze.
All the way to Canada, apparently.
It froze. Like, it's such a huge body of water. And in Chicago, they're experiencing, like, these strange sort of, like, explosion kind of sounds. So what is it? They liken it to is, like, if you leave a bottle of water in the freezer... And it pops and explodes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's happening underneath Chicago right now. So people, okay, it's over
like
the weekend.
Pipes.
And things are just exploding.
I saw pictures of toilet cisterns that have just exploded and you can't see them anymore. There's just a block of ice.
So you'd have to replace your cistern of your loo because the ice will have expanded and broken the ceramic.
Yeah. People lifting up the toilet lid.
Wow.
And it's icicles inside. Like,
that's phenomenal. Apparently, if you breathe too quickly, if you breathe in that freezing cold air very, very quickly, it can actually hurt you.
Yeah. Well, this one woman went outside with wet hair. She threw her hair up and then it sort of just like stuck.
Well, the same friend of mine sent a video, and the only reason I won't play it now is because it's visual. There's nothing for you to see, really, on podcasts. To hear with us. And he throws out a mug of really warm boiling water, and it just turns to powder in the air. It turns into icy powder. Isn't that amazing? So, yeah, that's the polar vortex. It's pretty bloody scary.
Yeah, like, someone also posted a picture of chicken eggs. That they got from the barn and cracking them and they're solid inside.
Sure. No, I think it must be terrifying to be at minus 20 anything. And then there are places that are even colder than that, but some of them are used to it. Like there's a place called Umyakon in Russia, which has got the lowest recorded temperatures of all.
Yeah.
And that place is regularly at minus 30, minus 40. Can you imagine?
But they're rigged for it.
Well,
like even, I mean, we aren't nearly as rigged as places in the US are.
They've got double glazing on their windows. They've got seals on the doors. They've got all of that kind of thing. They wear clothing that's appropriate to that kind of temperature.
But even so, there are photographs of frost and ice coming into the corners of the inside of the house.
Apparently, there's even ice that happens on the inside of the windows. You know, like how you see the ice on the outside? Whew.
Yeah, it's serious.
Yeah, very, very scary. All right, well, that's all we got time for this morning, but we have some interesting guests popping by in a short while. We're going to talk about how much you know about cancer, as much as you might not want to think about it. Educating yourself about this is the first step in empowering yourself around it. That's why we're glad to record a 10-part podcast with Discovery on oncology. I'll tell you more about that. It discusses the cancer journey, healthy living during that and post-cancer treatment. It's a must-listen podcast. I'm very proud of this. We've been working on it for a while. And to discuss this, we're going to have a couple of the people from Discovery in to join us. And I want to specifically find out what are some of the trends that, you know, Discovery have this huge database of health information that they've been tracking all of us on. And if you are a Discovery Health member, then you know the vitality and all the rest of it plays a huge part in this ecosystem that we're trying to understand. And they have at their fingertips a huge amount of information, big data around what's going on over there. So we'll speak to the guys from Discovery in a short while, find out exactly what we need to know about how trends are developing, how we can empower ourselves with knowledge, and how this podcast is just one of the ways that people can figure out how to deal with all of the things that are happening around oncology. It's all coming up for you. CliffCentral.com, that's next. Alrighty, it is a Monday morning. We've got lots of things to do today, and you've probably got a lot of things to do too. You've got a to-do list, because I carry those around. I start my week with a list, and then I work my way through as many of them as I can.
Do you paper or digital?
It depends. I write a lot of it in paper, because it changes.
Yeah.
I have to adapt the stuff. However, there are interesting things that we want you to know about, and then we're very exciting things that we're launching this week. You can be a part of this journey with us. You know, I've often thought, imagine you are, and who doesn't know someone who's either been diagnosed with cancer or someone who has recently discovered that a relative or a friend or someone that they really care about has been diagnosed with cancer. Where do they go? Who do they talk to? How do they get information? How do you become someone who's empowered with this kind of info? And how do you do that in your own time? How do you get to do it quietly on your own, where you can listen to something again and again? You can get to meet the people who have the expertise. You get to share stories from other survivors. It's the kind of journey that's very private, and it's the kind of thing that you don't just get on television or in radio or in magazines or in any of those things. And who has the time, frankly, if you do find it? Well, podcasting is a way to solve that problem. So if you have something like this happening in your life, let's say you get diagnosed with breast cancer and you don't know what to do. You don't know who to talk to. You've only just got the information from your doctor. Where do you go? Well, we've put together with Discovery a series, it's a number of episodes, on how you can go about understanding this problem, this situation that you find yourself in. The diagnosis itself, you'll hear opinions from the most learned people in the business, people like Dr. Carol Benn, who knows this like the back of her hand and has treated so many people. You'll hear survivor stories and how it's not an insurmountable problem. It'll help you to deal with all the various social and familial aspects to this, which people don't often discuss. And by the end of it, you'll hopefully be one of those people who knows what to do, what to say, what to think, and you won't feel so alone. I imagine that that's a useful way of dealing with this.
Absolutely.
And I think
it's so overwhelming.
I'm sure, and for many people, they wouldn't know where to start. So this will at least give you a place to start. And I'm very proud of the fact that we're doing this with Discovery. It's kind of a first of its kind in South Africa. And this morning, to talk about all the amazing information that Discovery has been putting together and the incredible trends that they can observe because of their unique position and having all the information at their fingertips, which they do because of their enormous database of clients, I've got with us Gareth Friedlander and Chris Jones from Discovery Life and Discovery Health, each of them specifically from those two divisions. So, gentlemen, first of all, congratulations on all the things that you guys are doing. I see Discovery going into finance and going into investment and insurance, but really at the heart of it is the health and the life business. And what makes those so exciting is the fact that you now have millions and millions of people. They're giving you their information. You're able to figure out things about the health of South Africa and certainly the health of your clients that you weren't able to figure out before. And this is potentially where we will discover ways to treat and to understand and to diagnose and to finance better health for most South Africans and certainly for people who are clients of yours. So welcome, first of all. Gareth, nice to see you.
Thank you.
What are the trends that you're observing at the moment? And with all of this huge database of information, what are the things that are most relevant that you're discovering that you didn't know before?
Thanks, Gareth. So it's great to be here.
Sure. Thank you.
I think, you know, you've mentioned the fact that insurers in general will typically have the largest database around health and wellness information in the world, and obviously enables us to observe incredible trends. And perhaps more importantly, in the discovery space where you talked about vitality, not only the trends around where illnesses are going, but around how you can change behavior and impact those illnesses.
Absolutely. And you guys have really led the way there in international terms, not just locally.
Yeah, absolutely. In the cancer space specifically, the trends trends are quite frightening. I'll let Chris talk to some of the numbers in more detail, but we've seen an enormous increase over the last decade or so, which in kind of actuarial terms is a very short space of time to see the types of numbers that we're seeing.
So, Chris, you're with Discovery Health. I mean, you guys, you have the barometer. You have the stethoscope on all of us. So what are these trends that Gareth's talking about?
Thanks for having us. And I think as Gareth mentioned, it is pretty concerning some of the trends that we're seeing coming through. So at the moment in the medical scheme, there are about 1.5% of the members of the medical scheme are actively undergoing oncology treatment, which equates to about 40,000 lives, which is quite frightening, the number of individuals who are actively undergoing oncology treatment.
What percentage is that?
1.5%. Of members on Discovery Health medical schemes. So it's quite scary, the number of individuals, and that's increased by about 45% over the past 6-7 years. So you're continuing to see more and more individuals, unfortunately, who are requiring treatment from an oncology perspective. And I think it really just highlights the need for appropriate cover from a health insurance perspective, life insurance perspective, that when unfortunately you are diagnosed with something like cancer, that you're able to undergo the required treatment, that you've got that support that's there to help you through.
Sure. I mean, when you're going through it, you don't really care how many other people are, because you think, oh, well, why the hell did this happen to me? But let's talk particularly about cancers that affect women. What are we seeing on the life and health side? I mean, is there any good news? Are there decreases in the rate of women dying of cancer on the life claim side over the past few years?
Yeah, so there's some good and bad news. I think on the bad news side, we see amongst females about 48% of our severe illness claims were for cancer last year. So almost one in two kind of illnesses or diseases that females are picking up is cancer. On the good news side, our cancer-related death claims amongst females are declining quite rapidly. So we're seeing about a 31% decrease in cancer-related deaths over the last 5 years. So an increase in incidence, but an increase in survival as well, which really talks to treatment.
I mean, we'd rather hear that, right?
Yeah. Could it not also be that people are being diagnosed earlier and being diagnosed full stop, whereas in the past it wasn't detected and people would get to the point where it was already terminal before they even knew?
That's exactly right.
It's definitely one of our theories from the medical scheme side, that amongst women, I think most prevalent type of cancer by far is breast cancer. And you are seeing an increasing proportion of women undergoing screening for breast cancer. Mm. So if it's been picked up, it has been picked up earlier. And I suppose that just helps the survival rates. There's some amazing member stories, I think, that hopefully we'll get into during the podcast at a later stage.
Absolutely. They're all in there, yeah.
I think probably skin cancers as well, that are really detected early. There's just such a great awareness in skincare products at the moment, and looking after your skin in the sun and seeing dermatologists. So it's all kind of caught early.
Exactly. So early detection is a huge kind of trend and something that we're trying to encourage. And then treatment is obviously getting better as well. So detecting it earlier, but you kind of can't open a medical journal these days without seeing a new breakthrough drug for cancer that's coming out. So an enormous strides being made in the treatment space as well.
Oh, that is good news. All right, let's turn our attention from the women to the men now. Cancers that affect men. I mean, are we making any progress there on the life and the health side? Do we have information?
So from a health side, it's like with women, I suppose primary type of cancer, there's breast cancer. Amongst men, it's primarily prostate cancer. Uh-huh. For men, though, it's a lot later on of age that you typically developing prostate cancer. But I think, again, it's the concern is that more and more men are being diagnosed with prostate cancer. Gareth can maybe speak more to some of the survival rates that you do see.
So that's quite right in terms of age. We're seeing that kind of above like 50. Prostate cancer in men is about 55% of all cancers, so it becomes incredibly prevalent at those older ages.
Sure.
And then younger age males, you tend to see testicular cancer being pretty prevalent as well.
And are we seeing like survival rates going up there, just like we saw with breast cancer?
Yeah, we are. And again, it's the I don't have the numbers offhand on the prostate cancer survival rates, but again, early detection, screening and treatment is
well,
driving.
Let's just talk about that, because Discovery has a number of programs that they're obviously putting in place to help detect these things earlier. And have these been measurably and markedly making a difference?
So I think from the women's side that you can definitely see that we would encourage women, as an example, to go for a mammogram or to go for pap smears, etc. Mm-hmm. You have seen over the past 6-7 years seen an increase in the proportion of individuals going for screening. And the theory is that you do pick it up earlier. And I think it's one, by making it available through the medical scheme. And then secondly, from Vitality perspective, many of the members of the medical scheme are part of Vitality. They're being encouraged to regularly go for screening. And so it just helps them to pick it up at an earlier stage. So I think there is a good news story on that side.
Now, there's a lot of research into cancer treatment, and you mentioned this, Gareth, just a minute ago about these breakthrough drugs. The high cost of these drugs is just incredible, though. And a lot of people imagine that if they are covered for one particular thing, that they're covered for everything. And obviously, your actuaries are hard at work trying to figure out what is and isn't doable, because some of this stuff is outrageously expensive and very experimental, and some of it is, you know, tried and tested, and probably the cost has come down because it's being used more universally. So how exactly do you guys figure all this stuff out?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So there's an entire spectrum, right? So you kind of get your high cost drugs, but that are past the experimental phase. Mm-hmm. Then you get these kind of high cost new age drugs that are coming out all the time that are probably still classed as experimental, mm-hmm. probably only available overseas. Chris will have more detail on the actual costs, but you know, these types of drugs, when you tend to have to go overseas to get access to them to go for treatment, can be into the millions in some cases when you consider all the additional costs that come along with that. Yeah. Transporting your family and accommodation in dollars, and those types of costs can be exorbitant. And I guess, again, that talks to the need for cover. So obviously on the medical aid side, we try to cover as much as you can, but you can't cover everything in this space. And you know, that's what I guess severe illness cover is for, to give yourself the best chance. And, you know, I think if any of us were in these positions, or even worse, had a child who was in one of these positions, you'd want to give that child the absolute best treatment in the world at kind of any price. So that's what we design in the products for, creating features on the products that enable a boost to the sum assured if you need to go for treatment overseas, and those types of things.
Maybe if I can just give you an example of how the costs have changed over the last few years. That,
sure.
Again, going into breast cancer, but there's a certain type of breast cancer where back in the day, chemotherapy would have been the type of treatment that you undergo. That's maybe about $40,000 for a course of chemotherapy. Nowadays, for that specific type of breast cancer, you could access a drug called Herceptin, which costs about $335,000. So it's significantly more expensive, but it has a phenomenal impact on certain types of members who've had that. So for those members, the question is, how do they get access to it? From a medical scheme perspective, though, the question is, how do you give members access to it, but do it in a sustainable manner? Because ultimately, I suppose that the money of the medical scheme, it belongs to all the members, and you want to make sure that you, I suppose, giving appropriate access to members there. So a lot of the time, we're working with the various different pharmaceutical companies to try and bring down the cost of these advanced treatments that are being brought into South Africa, just to make them more accessible to members. And then, as Gareth mentioned, the fact that, I suppose, the role of life cover, that where a member might have shortfalls or co-payments, that's where life cover can come in to help them get access to these latest advanced treatments.
I'm also curious, like with cancer, as opposed to some of the other things, it does come back. I mean, people go into remission, and then later on there's the ugly situation rears its head again, and then they have to, you know, repeatedly seek treatment, and sometimes 2-3 times in their lifetime. And I would imagine that the costs there are also prohibitive in some cases. So what do you guys do?
Yeah, so the trends around relapse are quite staggering. Of our multiple claimants last year, where the first claim was cancer, 77% of the time the second claim was also cancer. So, you know, you do tend to see those relapses coming through, sadly. And, you know, for, I guess, many of our listeners would have been in a situation where they've had someone in the family go through that. I think sometimes the relapse can be almost more devastating than the initial
And the treatment diagnosis. Has to be more aggressive.
Exactly right. Even if it comes back at a lower stage, you tend to treat it more aggressively if it's a relapse. So that is a serious consideration to deal with. And we developed a product recently, about a year ago, where we introduced the first cancer relapse benefit globally on our severe illness product. So typically severe illness products will pay for one progression of cancer, but won't pay more than 100% of the sum assured. We've now got a product where we'll pay for up to two relapses to up to 365% of the sum assured, really recognizing the financial impact of a relapse on our members' lives.
And obviously taking into consideration that these people would be more than willing to pay for that in advance if they knew that it was going to happen, because they've been through it before.
Exactly.
Those, you know, those are the people who know that there's an advantage to being prepared for these things.
Yep.
So how close are we to sorting this cancer thing out? Because I read some article the other day about another miracle drug.
The Israelis seem to be making the news lately with their treatments. Yeah.
I mean, is there any chance in hell that during our lifetimes we'll be able to find comprehensive cures for some of these cancers?
$1 million question, I guess.
You guys are at the forefront. You're constantly attending all kinds of conventions all over the world and speaking to the smartest doctors. I mean, what do you know?
Yeah, look, the rate of progress is incredible. So they're making exponential progress in kind of finding new drugs. I don't think we're anywhere close to kind of a ubiquitous cure for cancer that cures all types of cancers. I think what we're starting to do is really super specialize in the type of treatment. So treating a very particular type of cancer in a particular space, and they're making progress in that way. Who knows, so many types,
that's the thing.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's also important just to differentiate between maybe the cure versus increasing survival rates, making sure that members can, you can assist with the cancer. And that's what we are seeing, that there's definitely increase in survival rates, which is positive. So crystal ball, hopefully you continue to see that. But
give you many more years of meaningful life, even if you are diagnosed with it and do manage to beat it early on.
Yes.
But I mean, this is very hopeful, because 50 years ago, none of this stuff was happening. There was no way anyone knew what to do. It was kind of, you know, that was the death knell.
Absolutely. So it's not only the drugs, as we talked about earlier, the screening, the early detection, together with the type of lifestyle that one needs to live once you are suffering with cancer. So I think you're kind of attacking it on all ends, and hopefully that impacts, survival and quality of life post a cancer diagnosis.
And are people also changing their lifestyles? I mean, you guys have oversight into what's going on with Vitality, for example, so you can monitor behavior. Are people starting to take this stuff seriously and finding reasons to cut the carcinogens out of their diet, to stop smoking, to start looking after themselves, be a little healthier, avoid obvious risks? Is that happening?
To some extent, but probably not as much as we'd want. I think there are always individuals, I suppose, who are starting to lead a healthier lifestyle. I think the issue is just when you look at the South African population in general, that there's relatively high levels of obesity, poor diet, physical inactivity, etc., which when you're looking at certain types of cancers that do have lifestyle links, that's where the concern comes in. Not all cancers, I suppose, do have those lifestyle links, but there are definitely some cancers that do have lifestyle links. And that's what a member, I suppose, can focus on. How do you live a healthier lifestyle that you're then less at risk of certain types of cancers? Unfortunately, I suppose it would be amazing if every member lived a healthier lifestyle. It doesn't necessarily always happen, but there are very good news stories or positive stories where members have changed their lifestyle and it's been positive to them, reducing the risk.
What other exciting and interesting things have you discovered just looking at the numbers? Because you have all this data, you have all this information. Are there other areas that you've applied various models to and discovered things about the health of the average member in South Africa, what people aren't doing and what they are doing that they should be taking cognizance of? I mean, are there things there that you, because you have this amazing database of information, that you guys are uniquely placed to interpret?
Yeah, so I think for me the exciting part is really the behavioral side of it and trying to understand what types of incentives one needs to put in place to change that behavior. So we're seeing with you know, small things like active rewards where you get a coffee a week or mm-hmm. a smoothie or whatever it might be, that's tended to increase physical activity by about 25% around the world.
People have been persuaded to move around a bit. They really, get a quick coffee.
They really want that smoothie. Hey?
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. So it's quite remarkable what you do tend to see and how you can change that behavior. So I think we're learning all the time around how do you make those rewards more personalized, more relevant to people, and kind of more real time. And all of that is having a huge impact in terms of behavior change. So we're seeing that come through in increased physical activity, more eating of kind of healthy food. Smoking levels are down slightly. It's hard
to break that habit.
It's hard to break that habit. I think we're still working really hard in that space. And you see that come through in lower claims. You genuinely see that the members who engage tend to have on the life side about a 50 to 60% lower mortality rate. So obviously die later. There's been a huge impact, and I think that's incredibly encouraging. But we're continuing to learn.
And I would imagine also doctors find this stuff very interesting, because doctors are now able to share information across continents and in massive ways that they couldn't do before. So if a doctor discovered some kind of breakthrough somewhere and they didn't have enough information to back up their discovery, now they'd be able to, using, you know, various amounts of information from all over the world, they'd be able to put that up on a chart and compare things and figure out what the cause of a particular cancer might have been, what it could be linked to, what kinds of lifestyle things the various patients across a very broad spectrum of things could be compared with. I mean, ultimately, this is the way to do research in its purest form.
Definitely. I think the information that's available nowadays, it's amazing, and I think it's just continuing to use that to understand where to focus, what are the key areas from a scheme perspective, from a life perspective, where can you have the greatest impact from a member perspective. And I think that's why where you do see some of the changes, year-on-year changes to the various different benefits, I think that's been driven by us having a better understanding or appreciation of our members. And I think the same must go from a research perspective. That
and then you've got things like you're doing, you know, people's whole genome and sequencing, this kind of thing, that cancer is something which happens at the cellular and at the DNA level. So the more information we have, the likelier we are to make these breakthroughs. And I would imagine some researchers all over the world are in a hurry to access that database of yours. Yes, and compare markers on various people's genomes and all the rest.
Exactly right. It's all a data game, right? Yeah. You know, all sorts of researchers approach us on an ongoing basis, trying to validate trials, do empirical mm-hmm. studies, and that's something that we work with them on an ongoing basis. And the more data we can collect and understand, the more chance there is of a real breakthrough and of real progress.
Well, congratulations on everything you guys have done so far. I'm very excited about this series that we're launching. Hopefully it will help many people to get into a better understanding. It'll help them to deal with things from an emotional point of view. It'll help them to hear other opinions. And for people who feel very alone, and for people who feel that they might be the only one going through this, this will make them feel a little less so. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Great to be
Gareth here. Friedlander and Chris Jones, both of them from Discovery. Gareth's from Discovery Life and Chris is from Discovery Health. Thank you for joining us this morning. If you want to hear the podcast series, we're going to put it out so that you can binge if you like, or you can listen to one episode at a time, you know, however you'd like to go through that, and pass it on to friends and family so that they can hear it too. And who knows, you might just make someone a little less anxious and nervous about what they've just been presented with. Might help them to deal with everything.
Yeah, I mean, medical aids seem to be this kind of dark space in a lot of people's minds. You can't understand them. The algorithms that are used are so confusing. But just through my own personal experience with my mom, who was hospitalized for over a year, and the ease of claiming and the way it worked there was just mind-blowing. It was just amazing. I mean, we ended up putting in a 1.7 million rand claim, and all we paid for was a pair of boots, you know, for stability. But it was enlightening and made me realize the real importance of having a medical aid for those situations where you're going to have these enormous claims.
That was Discovery.
And that was Discovery, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, again, on another personal level, I've just had a sleep test, which Discovery paid for, and been diagnosed with severe apnea. And I now have a machine.
She's carrying around equipment like you cannot believe she's got a wheelbarrow that she has to take this out with on her way out.
But it's preventative. I mean, it's probably saving me from, you know, heart issues and all sorts of things. So, I just appreciate that.
Well, it's good to understand these things. This in particular is about oncology, and you'll be able to listen to all of the episodes. We'll release them a little bit later this week. In fact, today I think we're going to start with a series. So, keep an eye on cliffcentral.com for more information, and we will send out a whole lot of reminders too as the episodes become available. But don't miss this special series brought to you by Discovery on oncology, especially for you. Thank you very much. That's all we got time for this morning. Cliffcentral.com. It is 8 o'clock. We've got the news. Ben, did you send it through? Just checking whether Ben's doing his job in the background.
Or if he's really slacking off.
Yeah, I think he might be.
Is he sleeping? I don't know. It's all that drinking this weekend.
It's all the drinking this weekend and the fact that he hasn't got your sleeping Jesus.
Ugh, love it.
Unpack that huge box of stuff. All right, that's it from us. We will see you tomorrow.
This is CliffCentral.com.